It's time to tell the neighbors the Charlie Evers Show is on. It's time that you can listen to eras long bygone. So email all your loved ones or call them on your phone and tell them Charlie Evers is on. It may be terminal wrinkles, it may be Hillary's hair, it may be on top of the courthouse, you bet old Charlie's there. You may be invited to dinner, but tell them you can't come. The Charlie Evers is on.
Okay, and good morning to all of you. It's 10:17 Eastern Daylight Time, and it's a nice morning. We may get some precipitation yet today. You know, it's pretty definite for some areas, but yeah, it's really nice now. Temperature's just perfect in here. It's 77, not bad. Wow. And how are you doing all today, all of you out there in Radio Land? Well, it's been, let me see. Yeah, that's right. I've gone through the weekend, Monday and Tuesday, and now it's Wednesday, and I'll be here Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Okay, and I thought, you know, I've been seeing a television commercial recently, and something keeps bugging me about it. The fact that it's an electrical supply company, it might be, I don't think it's Ohio Edison. It might be American Electric Power, AEP. And, of course, these guys work so hard. I mean, and what really is interesting, the parts and pieces they need, apparently, to make all these repairs after a storm are quite readily available, it looks like. And they do, you know, they're trained. They do such great work. Boy, especially when they get our power back on. I remember during the blizzard of 78, we only had 11 hours or 12 hours without power. And I saw an Ohio Edison truck go by our house that day. I could hardly see it for all the wind and snow. And it wasn't very long. Our power was back on. But anyhow, the guys doing electrical repairs that work for no matter what utility company it is. You also have, of course, the gas line people, Ohio Fuel Gas or Columbia Gas, anymore. You know, you've got all these different companies selling you either gas or selling you electric instead of one company that manufactures or generates the electricity, selling it to you. It then goes through other people that they can sell it. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? Well, that gets me around to the fact that this television commercial, it could be American Electric Power. Do you see in that commercial I'm talking about a man climbing up with his spikes on and the belt climbing up an electric pole like they did, you know, 50, 60, 70 years ago or more? That same way, digging in those spikes and then moving that belt in front of him up with each step he takes. Remember that? Well, now they show that as current. Do electrical repair crews still use spikes? Now, the poles usually are white cedar, which I often use, most of the time for making shingles. And there is kind of soft. And I was always curious. And about, when was it, 50 years ago at least, or more, I got so curious, and a friend of mine had a set of those spikes. And he needed somebody to climb up his telephone pole and put his, I think it was a TV antenna on it. And I said, well, I'll do it, because I'd often seen these men climbing these poles. And I thought, that really looks intriguing. And so I did. I got half the way up, though. And I didn't do something right. I didn't dig in the spurs well enough, and I slipped, and down I came. And as I came down that pole, The poll had some bad spots in it, and I ran those bad spots right through my my edge of my arm. I still have a scar from that. But and that's why I'm wondering today, with all the safety measures that all these utility people abide by and are ruled by, do they still use spikes? And I can't believe it, because, but if they don't use spikes, if they're using the hydraulic buckets only, why do they show a man climbing a pole with spikes on? Now, if any of you can fill me in on that, I would sure appreciate it. Are utility men, electrical linemen, still using spikes as they did 50 or even 100 years ago? That's why when you, in town, if you look at some of the telephone poles standing up, you'll see all the where spikes have dug in over the years, men climbing that pole. But also you'll see the fact that a lot of people hung nailed up signs advertising yard sales, and when they're done, they just pull the paper off and leave the nails and various things sticking out of the pole. Now, can you imagine, like what I said I encountered, sliding down a pole and hitting those nails? Well, it'd tear a person all to pieces. And that's why they really are trying, I don't hear it much anymore, trying to discourage people from pasting all those signs on telephone poles. Maybe they're not talking much about it because they're using the hydraulic bucket trucks only. Now, who can fill me in on that? I would appreciate a call, 740-383-9944. And if you can answer that, then I've got another quest concerning railroading. And maybe I shouldn't have been, but I've been so curious over the years. And that's how I learn anything, by being curious and asking questions. But I've got a question about railroading in Marion. You know, we talk about losing the shovel, losing Tecumseh, and losing American Malibu, and it goes on and on. We have Whirlpool, and we have, the steel plant. We have the alcohol plant. We got the Marion Industrial area out east of town. Great guns. We've got as much going as we ever had, and probably a lot more. But no one, to me, has ever mentioned railroading. The fact that Erie is gone, has been gone for years. And is there anyone still living that can tell me how you make up a train and how you would have left Marion as an engineer, perhaps? How did you get your train put together for you? Yeah, naturally, they did it for you. But how did they do that? How did they give you the cars that you were supposed to carry or pull that day to where? Meadville, Pennsylvania, was it? Was that your next stop out of Marion? And then we went to Meadville and came back? I'd like to know more about that. Maybe you wouldn't, but to me, it's a real curiosity. We had so much going. In fact, practically a whole end of our town was housed by railroaders or Marion Power Shovel people. The whole southwest side of Marion, you know, that was, and Pollock Steel, Armco Steel, and what all has been there. But the current company now is going great gangbusters. Okay, 10:25 is the time, 740-383-9944. Is there anyone still living out there that can tell me the procedure of, say you're an engineer, and you, okay, go ahead, caller.
Hey, Charlie.
Yeah.
Yeah, they asked me a railroad question.
Yes.
I worked on Erie.
Oh, did you?
Back then. When they put the trains together here in the yard, they had what they called the hump.
Yes, I remember the hump.
And the tracks ran off different angles, and you had to throw a switch. When the car came down, they had a number on them, like the car number and all. And
yes,
you had a list, and you had to throw that switch. You wanted track one, track two, or whatever like that. That's how they got them put together.
Okay, so the man that regulated...
Man down hook, and you hook up the... Make sure the knuckles and air hoses were all hooked, and then they put the engine in and bore them out.
Yeah. Now, who determined what cars went where? What was he called?
The dispatcher.
Dispatcher, okay. What did the yard master do?
The yard master, he was in charge of the whole yard.
Okay, the big boss. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
but, when they came down, well, the yard master and dispatcher, they all worked together. But, they had a hump out there.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Now, when the engineer reported for duty, did he just climb into his engine and everything was ready for him? Did he have to do anything to prepare for that run up to Pennsylvania?
Yeah, well, we had to, when we reported for duty, sometimes we had to check out all the cars, make sure they were all lined up right, and make sure they were all hooked. But a lot of times the train would come in from out west, Indiana or someplace, and we would get on the main line, just hop on and be ready to go. But we had a list of where all the cars had to be set off and cars to pick up between here and Akron. Our stop normally was Akron.
Okay.
Kent, Ohio. But they had a crew that went on into Meadville.
Yeah.
But you usually switched to crew at Kent, because when you went to Meadville, you had a single track, and you had to pull off the side to let another train come by.
Yes, like they do now.
Yeah, but sometimes, I went to Meadville a few times, but my regular run was from here to Kent.
Oh, okay.
And then we would hop off at Kent, and then the other crew would hop on.
Okay, were you a brakeman or a conductor or an engineer?
I was a brakeman, but there were times that I had to work as a flagman and work with a conductor.
Okay, what did the fireman do after, in a diesel engine?
The fireman, he was more or less, when we were switching whatever, he would look out his window, be able to see our signal at night or whatever, you know, when to go forward or back up. But then he also, if anything happened to the engineer, then he took over the operation of the train.
Okay, so he was capable of being the engineer, yes.
Yeah, he was trained to be an engineer.
Okay. And the brakeman, what did he do?
Do what now?
The brakeman, what was his job?
That you cut out on me.
Oh, okay. Are we there yet?
Yep. Okay. That's basically about what we did.
Okay. Well, I got a break here in just a minute. And, Bob, we're going to talk. I want to know more about the makeup of a train. I'm going to do some more after 10:30. I appreciate you calling, Bob.
All right.
Okay. All right. And Bob Austin, he'll probably call some more. That's what I'd like to know. And this is a part of Marion that no one brings up because the railroad, for the most part, is gone. There are still a little bit of activity, isn't there? Now it would be, what, CSX? And incidentally, number 6011 that was in Marion, that was Norfolk and Southern, or Norfolk and, Southern. That engine, that streamlined steam engine, it was in Marion. It was taking a group of people, and it stopped here to put some more people on to go to the Ohio River for a cruise. That number 6011 is in one of my favorite places, Strasburg, Pennsylvania, for a showing. That's the Strasburg Railroad there. Rode that railroad at least 40 times now. So that's where 611 is temporarily.
Charlie, do you know because of you, more Marion residents know that flipping the bird was invented in 320 BC than in any other county in America?
Yes, but I didn't tell you the rest of the story.
What's that?
At 320 BC, in 1 minute, the fat lip was invented.
WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
Three, two, one. Oh, no. Which button am I...
When every second counts, you can't wing it.
Guys, a little help up here?
In a home fire, you may have less than 2 minutes to get out. So make a family home fire escape plan. Then practice home fire drills at least twice a year so everyone knows what to do when they hear... Prepare your family at ready.gov/firedrill. Brought to you by FEMA, the Ag Council, and Make Safe Happen.
Okay, we're back once again and talking a little bit about railroading and the fact that we never hear anything about the Erie Railroad that was once a powerhouse in Marion for employment and for activity. My goodness. And since it's been out of existence for so long, we tend to forget about the Erie Railroad. Now, part of the Erie Road operation is used now by the Union Tank Car Company, at least, you know, some of the trackage and things like that. Union Tank Car does a wonderful job of beefing up and repairing the tanker cars, and they do a mighty fine job of it. 10:32 is the time. Okay, so the caboose, which we have no more, and the caboose lends itself to nostalgia, really. We had a caboose on the end of every train, and its job, well, who was in the caboose? And what did they do? Now, they had their own stove and had their food in there, and they had a place where they could look out. But what were the people in the caboose doing? What was their real job? 10:33 is the time. Anyone out there with a relative that used to be in a caboose or work in a caboose? And I'm just wondering, too, where is Ted Jolliffe? Ted, I think, was an engineer. We haven't heard. And one of my buddies just died, Bob Lucas. He was an engineer. He did a lot of the local switching. And he passed away recently. In fact, just, a week or so ago? I think, yeah, that was Bob. Oh, no, wait a minute. No, Bob's still, his wife passed away, I think it was. Anyhow, Bob and I used to go fishing, and he was an in-town engineer, I'm sure. Okay, 10:33 is the time. It'd be fun to talk about the extent of the Erie operation in Marion. And then there's, here we go, all right. Okay, caller, go ahead.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
On the caboose.
Yes.
The guys that rode your caboose was your conductor and your flagman. The conductor was actually in charge of the back there if we had a derailment.
Yes.
Or whatever. He would make sure we didn't get run into. We had a flagman that would walk back and put out flares or dynamite caps, so anybody coming behind us wouldn't run into us.
Okay.
When we had a derailment or a knuckle come loose, it had to be changed.
Now, the
conductor would usually walk half of the train up the back looking, and when I was on the front, I would have to walk from the front back until we found out where we had the brake at.
Got a lot of exercise,
Yeah.
In all kinds of weather.
Right. Oh, it didn't matter. Rain, snow, dark, cold. And if a lot of times you had a, like going over the hill there at Mansfield and Ashland Hill.
Yes.
And sometimes your knuckle would separate or the air hose would break.
Really?
And you'd have to walk back and find out where it was at and then repair it. And if the knuckle broke, I'd have to walk clear back up to the engine and pick one of them knuckles up and carry it back and replace it.
You could actually carry a knuckle?
Yeah.
Wow.
The knuckle, yeah. A lot of times sometimes they wouldn't break, they would just separate.
Yes, right.
Because of the balance of the train going up and down those hills.
Well, isn't that something? I didn't realize there was that much of a hill.
Right. Yeah, Mansfield, Ashland, yeah, there's a big hill. Now, it wasn't so bad on the front, but you had a train breaking too, and you were on the caboose. As soon as that air broke, you had, as I say, you were going a certain speed. You popped your feet up, braced yourself, and ready for the bang when the rest of the train hit into the front part, where it broke at.
Oh, my land.
So yeah, if you didn't brace yourself, if you didn't brace yourself, you'd have a big old bang on your head.
Oh, I can imagine. So you could feel it when you broke loose.
Hang on tight, because say you're doing 50 miles an hour, and you're going downhill, and that train, when it got up to the front, you were really going to go.
Boy, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, you also sat where you could look down the side of the train?
Right. The way the windows were. Now, some of the cabooses, they had the bed up in the top.
Yes.
You might have seen those. Well, we would have to look out that side and watch the train going around the curve and look and see if there's any sparks in any hot boxes. Uh-huh. A lot of times there'll be oil or something on the that would go dry on a wheel. And you'd have to, and if we had a radio, we'd have to get a hold of the engineer to stop so we could find a place to set it off.
Okay. Oh, wow. I bet railroad, the two-way radio, really was handy when they came about.
Well, yeah, they were handy, but half the time we went out and never had a radio.
Oh.
And everything had to be done by hand signal.
Yes. My.
And so sometimes, the engineer always had a radio, usually working, either on the first or second engine. But in the caboose, sometimes we didn't. So at night, we had to use flares and signal and whatever.
Okay. Now, also, the red light that you never went into a red light, did you?
You had red light, you had orange, yellow, the was called, and then the green.
Okay.
When you come up on that red light, you better be stopped.
Yes, because the train was coming the other. Yeah.
Right. Now, when it went to yellow or orange, then you can proceed with caution. And then when it went green, then he was able to go.
How did the engineer know if the last car was on the siding to let the other train pass? Did he have any way of knowing you were clear of the main line?
Yeah, well, if we didn't have a radio, usually the train wasn't that long when going like to Meadville.
Yes.
I'd have to get off and throw a switch. He would go on the siding and pull up, but if the train was longer than it was in on the siding, the flagman would hop out with his flare at night or his signal, and then I would get us back out when the other train passed us.
Wow.
I would get us back out, and then he would throw the switch and then signal us to go on.
You know,
and
Bob,
put it back to the main line now.
Nowadays, the trains are like 2 miles long, and they can't get into those sidings altogether. I was over in Galleon the other day, and a train blocked the main highway for a long time because he couldn't get in enough of him in the sidetrack to let the other train go by. Wow.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the tracks now are from Kent on the Meadville was all single track unless you had that siding.
Yeah. Now the train.
You got into Meadville.
The train I watched on Sunday was so long that there was another engine in halfway in between, and when he went by, it was running, so it was doing work.
Yeah. Now that's like the Dayton track. From here to Dayton, which was where the New York and them come in from Dayton.
Yes. Yes.
That was a single track.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, we had to switch out here to the lumber yard, down at Green Camp and all, and any place you switch. And you had to pull your train up and then back it in, whatever cars pick up whatever you're getting.
Okay, and that happened in the afternoons, and that's why I think one of the reasons why we have overpasses.
Yep.
Because that afternoon Dayton train blocked traffic.
Right. That usually, going from here to Dayton, it usually took us 16 hours.
Oh, six?
Switching and getting the whole way and whatever.
Wow.
Yeah. And then we go down, we stay here in Dayton, yard in Dayton, And when we got here, we didn't leave the train in the yard. We had to take it over to the other yard, back it in, and then the crew from the other yard would bring it in and make it up for us, like on three or four different tracks. And then we would have to line it all up to bring it back to Marion.
Wow. Amazing. So, you know, Bob, every day I see all these trains going through Marion heading northeast, cars full of cars, hauling cars. I wonder where they're coming from.
Hauling automobiles?
Yes.
Well, a lot of them are coming now of out of the west. Most of them come up. Well, they don't come from Lordstown anymore.
Okay.
But they would load them up at the car plants and then ship them in that way.
All right.
And years ago, they didn't have the sidings on the car trains.
Right.
And people were damaging the cars, and that's why they got that screen on them now.
Yes, I noticed. Boy, they really covered them up good. Yeah.
Yeah, they covered them up so they couldn't get damaged by new people throw rocks or whatever.
Yeah, isn't that something, how mean people were to damage those cars? Oh, my.
Yep.
Yep.
So, your train today, I think that was part of the reason why they put in that continuous rail, so they wouldn't have to be stopping and repairing track all the time.
Yeah, right.
They could keep the trains going.
A continuous rail was welded together with a special machine,
yep.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They would run and then just weld it together and go on down the road.
Yeah, wow.
So. It was something, and there was a few derailments. We would have people, if they'd be on the lookout, you get by a signal, and somebody would throw a switch. I don't know, after you got by that signal.
Yes.
And you wouldn't know it until you got up on it that the switch had been done.
Wow. So, railroads
that way.
Railroading was more complicated when you were...
If you wasn't on the ball, you know what you're doing, you'd be in a lot of trouble.
It sounds like a communication today is so much improved.
Yeah, when we were touring east, we got the Mansfield Yard right there in Ontario.
Yes.
We had to cross the trains or the cars from east over to the crossover into west to put it in the Mansfield.
Yeah.
And then you had to go signal to hold the other trains up. But you couldn't take too long. You had to hurry up and get them switched and get them out of the way so the other trains could get through.
Wow.
And you had to watch about crossing and made sure they were locked, switched them back and locked.
Yeah. Now, were you involved in the time of the steam, too, wasn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. What about the water for these engines? Did they ever run close to running out?
No. They filled all them. Like there's a diesel job at the yard here.
Yes.
They were all watered, oiled, fueled up and everything and checked before they came out.
Okay, sir.
And they had gauges that said it's running low.
And they put ice in, didn't they, on the refrigerated cars in Marion?
Yeah, the refrigerated cars, you don't have to worry too much about them.
Yeah, okay. Now, you haul... At one point, cattle was hauled in open cars, weren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, but not much of that anymore. Okay, Bob,
well,
we got to...
back in the day, when they hauled ice and whatever, they had what you call the ice cars.
Yes.
They were put in, and they kind of, like, insulated. They would throw ice at them and haul them that way.
Yeah, okay. I got to run, Bob. We got a break coming. Hey, thank you very much.
All right.
Okay,
I'll
Bob. Bob Austin. Okay, now, you see... I learned a lot. I hope you did, too, because... Scott, did you know that Halley's Comet used to fly over Marion every night?
No, Charlie, I didn't know that. How's that possible?
Well, it wasn't really Halley's Comet. It was Martha Dowse's fire baton coming from Girard Avenue.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
G. GTG, BRB, OMW, be there in a few. You may think that these kinds of texts are fine because of their length, and you can easily send them at a stoplight. But no, answering one text can take your attention away from the road for 5 seconds. And traveling at 55 miles an hour, that's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Make good decisions. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopRex.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Okay, back once again. And, oh, by the way, we've got prizes today. And I have got a couple of questions here. But now my other question for today, do the electric companies still use spikes like you see on that television commercial? I just can't imagine that the electric workers are using spikes yet to climb poles. I thought that was all given over now to the hydraulic trucks. Now, I need someone to zero me in on that. Are spikes still used for climbing poles, or is it all done with hydraulic lift trucks? It'd be much safer, I would think, with trucks, because like I did, I was climbing a pole. My spikes didn't dig in enough, and I slid down a pole and run the splinters up through my arm. I'll never forget that. And that led me to the fact that if you're an electrical worker, you sure must have to have sharp spikes, and that you dig them in, that you slam them into the pole as you're climbing. Of course, you slam them in, you also have to pull out the spike to go up another step. So is there anyone out there that can pass along that information on how is it done for sure? The television commercial we see showing a man climbing a pole with the spikes on, is that real, or is that an older vision of electrical repair? I would think it's all hydraulically done with, you know, hydraulic buckets now. Am I right or wrong? 10:48 is the time, and you're listening to WWGH. I think one of the most interesting interviews we could ever hear was today with Gary Burbank and Scott Spears. You know, I used to play Gary Burbank every day when I was at the original WDIF. We subscribed to his service at that time, and I thought that it was always so hilarious. Okay, now we have a caller. Okay, caller, go ahead.
An interesting fact about that AEP commercial.
Yes.
The guy climbing the pole is actually a lumberjack.
He is?
No, I'm just pulling your leg.
Yeah.
No, lumberjacks are probably the only ones that use those spikes these days.
I would think so. It's much safer using a hydraulic lift.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, some of those trees that lumberjacks use, they're way beyond.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And then you've got all the branches to strip off before you drop it, unless some of them, like, maybe they just drop them and then hack the branches and that stuff off later.
What I'm wondering is the electric company, whether it's AEP or whatever, are they using that illustration of using spikes to get our sympathy or to show something that really doesn't exist anymore?
Oh, I don't know. It's just it's essentially a mood piece. You know, if I recall, it's just a montage that, hey, we're here for you. We're here in bad weather, good weather. We make your life happy, et cetera, et cetera. Because without us, you'd be using candles and have rats on treadmills.
Yeah. Well, I haven't seen an electrical worker climbing a pole like that in years and years.
Mm-hmm. But well, some of them, good grief, I've got one over here that's probably close to 100 feet tall. It's wooden, but then there's another one. I've seen some that are metal.
Yes.
But then they've got those pegs that you can climb.
Right, right.
You know, up at a certain area. But there's a stick over here that looks like it's pushing 100 feet high, which those are far and few between anymore.
Okay, now how do they get to those?
How do they get to them?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they use a bucket and go up so far and then use the rest.
I wonder.
With, climbing spot.
I don't know where all of our electrical people are, but I sure wish one of them would call.
Well, let me see if I can get a hold of Victor Coleman, Jr. He's the community relations fellow at, First Energy, Ohio Edison.
Yeah.
I'll see if I can get in touch with him and have him give you a call.
Hey, that'd be great.
Okay, very good.
Very well. Okay, thanks. Okay, that's Terry Klein. Okay, and don't forget, too, our big day is coming up. Boy, just a little over a month. My goodness, a month and a week from now will be the big show at the airport. Wow. And so there's been a lot of preparation. Oh, my goodness, volunteers and airplanes, materials, and everything else, food. Well, anyhow, it's now 10:51 and a half, and my first question today for a prize would be, there is a street in Marion named after a county. Well, maybe I asked that one once before. Yeah, I think I did. There's a street in Marion named after one of the ladies. There were two ladies that were quite famous in the Bible. There's one street in Marion named after one of those ladies. And it's not Naomi. And can you tell me the name of the lady that we have a street in Marion named after that shows up in the Bible? 10:52 is the time. And what's new in your life? What did you do over the last weekend? Yeah, there was a lot of things in the news. And the coverage of that story, it continues on probably for time being. And the thing is that since nothing has been resolved, really, on a solution to the problem of mass killings, we could have another one in 10 minutes, So it's going to be interesting to see what is brought about. And it was, quite interesting, too, when the governor appeared in Dayton and they shouted him down. Because, talk is cheap. Yeah, that's it. Talk is cheap. 10:53 is the time. And my question is, name the lady. There were two ladies very famous in the Bible, but the one has a street in Marion named after her. Or named, I don't know if it was that particular lady from the Bible that they, here we go. Yes, caller, go ahead.
Is the lady in the Bible Mary? Mary Street?
No, it wasn't Mary. Mary is one in the Bible, but there were two ladies, and no, it wasn't Mary. Think about it. Okay. I remember my mother was a member of a Sunday school class that had the name of one of those ladies in it. And this was in St. Paul's Lutheran in Bucyrus. Okay, 10:54 right now, and can you name the lady in the Bible? A lot of times you hear the two of them associated together, and Naomi you usually hear first, and then followed by the other lady. Now, who was that lady? There's also a street in Marion named after someone in the military, or a military position, I should say. A street in Marion named after a rank in the military. 740-383-9944. And there's also a street in Marion named after something inside of a musical instrument. Guess that one. Something, a street by the name of an item that you have to have inside a certain musical instrument. 740-383-9944, 10:55 right now. Okay. All right, caller, go ahead.
Yeah, Ruth is the name you're looking for.
Yes, Ruth is right, Bob. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, you want a prize today?
No, I'm good.
Okay, all right, Bob, thanks.
Bye.
All right. Nice knowing. Now we know what Bob did in his years gone by, railroading. How many people are there still living in Marion that were railroaders?
how many people are still living that were engineers on the railroad? And do they have any interesting stories about being an engineer? Now, years ago, I was talking about, what was I, something about, about accidents on railroads. And the engineer, of course, being right up there in front. Of course, we've seen some engineers nowadays that lean back and read a magazine as a train goes along. We've advanced that much as far as communication. But years ago, when the engineer kept a constant lookout ahead, what did he think, or what went through his mind when a car suddenly appeared at a crossing and he knew he was going to hit it? Did he close his eyes, or did he see what happened? People flying out of the car, you know, in midair, maybe being run over by the train and so forth. I remember, too, railroading, yeah. This one guy said, the engineer said he would never, ever forget the sight of crashing into a car or an individual on the railroad track. And that sticks in your mind, of course, the rest of your life. Every now and then that pops in. But that's the way it is. Wow. 10:57 right now. A street in Marion named after something inside a musical instrument. Or a street with a military rank. All right. We got Ruth. Naomi Ruth. I'm sure if a preacher was listening, they could tell us the background of Naomi and Ruth. What were they famous for in the Bible? It wasn't going fishing. 10:57 and a half right now. 7:04, and hopefully we're lucky. Maybe we'll get an electrical person on the line and can tell us about climbing a telephone pole, whether that is accurate or not, that you see on television now on that guy climbing the telephone pole. Now, my hat goes off to these guys working in all kinds of weather, everything else. But how many today climb an electric pole using spikes? 10:58 is the time. And yes, there are some. Here's another thing. Inside these wind turbines, there obviously must be a ladder. Because once you can get in the door, you can climb to the top of that and do service work on that turbine. It has to be that way, because they do occasionally require service. But how would you get to, or get out there, to look at the turbine part? That's interesting. That's right in the middle, isn't it? Okay. Yeah, it's not off to the side. It's right in the middle. You climb up to it. And I wonder what kind of work that has to be done on a wind turbine. What must one do to service them, to keep them going? Is there a regular service date for each one? Or do they have a means of finding out what's happening up there with the turbine? Do they know whether they have to get in there and climb up the ladder to service them or not? Is there any indication? I'm sure there must be on the ground some instruments that show exactly what's going on in those huge wind turbines. And there's about to be a bunch of those west of Marion County, as well as the ones we already have. They look so impressive, the ones out of Whirlpool. Now, the Whirlpool plant in Findlay, the same way. And boy, they stand out. And if you don't know where Whirlpool is, just look for their wind turbines. Okay, we're coming up now on 11 o'clock. We'll be right back after a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM LP, Marion, Ohio. The place to talk. From broadcasting legends Charlie Evers and Marianne Michaels. Marianne, 30 years in Marion City Schools?
Yes.
Did you ever think you'd live to see the day?
No. I mean, that was atrocious, I think. Absolutely horrible. No, never had anything like that. I'll tell you what, I can't ever think of a student that I didn't like.
Yeah.
And I mean that sincerely.
Well, you know, it's funny, though, because Mary Ellen Withrow was in here last week, and we talked about Hillary, and she said one of the biggest obstacles she will face is